gentlemen, for the most rocking 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Finney Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, doing so 5 days a week from 5 till 7 p.m. Central Standard Time in Texas there, midday till 2 p.m. New Zealand time, and I think it's like 6 till 8 p.m. Eastern, and like real late at night, something like 11 to 1 a.m. In the UK, or as I like to call it, the Uber Kingdom. It's one of my favorite places in all the world. Now, speaking of the Uber Kingdom, long ago, there was an enormous amount of military naval might that such an empire, such as the British Requiem, seemed to use on the world in order to perpetrate essentially a trade embargo global scheme of privateer piracy, where the Queen would issue commissions. This is where you get the name commissioner, and you would use pirates to essentially do the government's bidding. This system is still the same today as it was back then. If you don't think pirates are running your governments, think again. The evidence is there. They drink lots of rum. They purchase expensive parakeets. They have lots of gold and everything. Not a whole lot has changed. Maybe the fact that they wear different hats now, or maybe that they've got two eyes and two legs instead of maybe an eye patch and a peg leg. This is the only real difference. Is a what would you say, a window dressing, as it were, to make you think that criminals aren't still in control. Today, we have a very special guest from Australia, one of the other piracy-run nations, much like New Zealand and the Uber Kingdom and the rest of the common stealth community. His name is Scott from truth-now.net in Australia. He's made a documentary called What the FUQ? And unfortunately, because of the FUQ, we cannot even pronounce what those words say because of the FCC, incidentally. So I'd like to say to the FCC, thank you very much for regulating our free speech, guaranteed to us under the Constitution of the United States, and on occasions like these where we're not even allowed to say what we normally would. I'd just like to say to the FCC, well, F you. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. I love your intro there with the FCC. They're fantastic, aren't they?
Yeah, fantastic. And the CC stands for two other words that are incidentally also regulated by the FCC. Now, would you be able to explain to us, Scott, just kind of your full name and sort of your backstory, because I'll actually kind of explain in an encapsulated form for the audience. Scott is previously seeing as we're talking about piracy, previously a major mega captain, okay, doing it for the billionaires. You know, have you ever noticed how fussy a billionaire is and how many details and how much specificity you need to do in order to work for people like that? They're very high strung, very the most demanding clientele in the world, essentially, because they can afford to be. In order to be in any way, shape, or form a person that is, say, running one of their ships, for example, you got to be so onto it and operating at the top of your field, the top of your game, for a significant period of time, have a long track record of being reliable and having an extraordinary attention to detail. This is Scott's background, and he's also a car enthusiast to a degree. He tried to import in my opinion, one of the most beautiful restored Corvettes I've ever seen in my life, whether on the internet or otherwise. And as he was trying to import it, the Australian customs were charging up at all of these ridiculous fees. You know how customs do that, everybody. You know, they charge you fees for absolutely nothing, including a separate fee on top of the car for the air conditioning. Now, I don't know about you, but in terms of carbon taxes, how exactly is sprinkling money on pollution supposed to clear it up? It won't. Instead, the money that you sprinkle on there winds up funneling its way into the pockets of some particular scumbag who with absolute absolutely no concern for environmental degradation whatsoever, and in fact are really only concerned with the degradation of your pocket so that they can line theirs. Scott then researched into this and had a look around, and it turns out that these agencies of the government are not actually agencies of the government of the people of Australia, as people might think, but in fact they are corporate entities that are branched off from another corporate entity that is registered in the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is essentially a party to fraud that is the Australian government in general and kind of runs the scams, keeps all the money. And I asked a whole bunch of people once at a conference, here's how to explain whether or not your government is a corporation. Number one, have you volunteered to pay your taxes? No. Okay. You're a slave and you pay all that money to a company that owns you. Your livestock, essentially, and all you're doing is running on the hamster wheel that they've created so they can siphon as much cash out of you as humanly possible through fraud, intimidation, and scumbaggery. Okay? That's pretty much it. So, Scott, if I've left anything out, please inform us.
Well, yeah, good intro. The clarification I'd make on the air conditioning gas, that pre-charged equipment license, was it was basically done through the Department of Environment. However, the interesting thing was that I only found out about that once my car had landed in the country. And that was a little bit weird because I thought, hang on, why am I only finding out about this one when I've asked for a detailed automation of everything up front before I even put it on the boat at the other end? That was a little odd that this pre-charged equipment license, this air conditioner fee, came in once my car had landed. It was almost like they've got you held hostage. You can't do anything without either paying the license fee or getting a mechanic down to the dock to degas the car, which is pretty ridiculous because you're basically going to go back and regas it and put the gas back in the air conditioner. Now, that just highlighted, again, the stupidity of what was going on. So, that was being sort of run, if you like, by customs for the Department of the Environment. And the ease at which that one went away when I asked essentially the Department of Environment who the hell they were was quite interesting. It was the letter came back pretty smart. Oh, we've categorised your car as a personal effect. Now, as you know, personal effects don't usually take the shape and form of a car, more like a toothbrush or a necklace. And this sounded like a very convenient way of saying, oh, get out of here, you just move along, nothing to see here, we don't want to worry about this one. And interesting, speaking to a number of car enthusiasts and importers after the fact, was all of the guys that are importing cars with aircon are either having to pay this license fee or degas their cars, and they're going through hell at the moment. So a couple of simple questions, got rid of that.
So it's not a unique experience to you, and in fact it would be industry-wide, wouldn't it, being applied carte blanche?
I would presume so, in as much as it's popping up in various circles that, yeah, we've got to pay this, supposedly, this license fee. And people, yeah, are starting to question that as well now.
Okay, so in terms of getting something into the public sphere, a lot of people who have careers, money, credibility, etc., will prevent themselves from involving too much in any form of activism or public awareness for fear of retribution back upon them, having said money, said career, or said freedoms sabotaged and or taken away. However, if other people who are in that same situation come out and do it regardless, it actually provides almost a safety net for those others, a confidence building for them to come forth as well. Now, since you've come out and said that the Australian government is a fraud and so are many of their associated agencies, have there been other car importers or professionals of the like within your network that have since come forward, or are you still working on those?
I suppose I haven't really encouraged anything along those lines. Rather, I suppose, trailblazing my own path, and whether people follow me or not is up to them. I have seen a few people who have asked some queries, so can I do this, can I do that? I've kind of turned it around and back on them and said, well, you ask those sort of questions of customs and ask if they can actually impose any might or rules over you if, in fact, they turn out to be a corporation masquerading as government. So if I can touch on something that you mentioned in the first part of that question about those people almost, in a way, fearful of stepping out and asking those sort of questions, what I identified was it's almost like there are certain folk who need the system. Now, whether they need it for an income, whether they need it for a supposed license, or whether they need it purely out of the fact of I feel warm and fuzzy knowing that I have a government that's protecting me. Now, if one gets to the point where they don't need something like that, in as much as they are operating in their own power and their own authority, they know who they are, and they take responsibility for what they do, then that need, to me, tends to disappear. And that, as a tool, then becomes the point where I don't care, I'm going to ask these questions of this mob regardless. And coming from that point of not needing them was almost like the starting point before even asking any of these questions.
I've noticed that just personally myself. You know, I just saw that there was no alternative media really here in New Zealand to speak of, whether that be in radio or video. And so I went out and I started doing all of it. It wasn't my responsibility to go out and do it, but because I took responsibility, now it is. And it's essentially a balance between dependence and independence. Okay, so do you need government? Okay, that means you're dependent on government. If you don't need government, it means you're independent. Okay, so it's a philosophical thing, but at the end of the day, if you're dependent, you're not free.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And I think wise words I heard at one stage, you are free when you say you are free.
Well, so, it's a state of mind as well. Like some people will be very cautious and afraid of this retribution. It's like people call me a conspiracy theorist, and then in the same tune as calling me a conspiracy theorist and saying conspiracies don't exist, they also say, aren't you worried about retribution?
From who?
Yeah, from these things that you claim don't exist. See, by that very intention, they're really actually clicking onto the fact that, yes, there is something bad going on here, and yes, there are real consequences to this. Now, in terms of intimidation, could you explain to me just kind of what their methods of intimidation are? Because as far as I know, there's a lot of paperwork intimidation, I call it, where there's no actual real physical threat or a scumbag with a gun at your door, but in actual fact is simply wording that makes you shiite Muslim your pants.
it appears that way. And you get these documents in the mail, and they're all very much, you have to do this, you have to do that. Except when I read them very carefully, and I'll quote, for example, that first letter that I got from Customs, it was actually very cleverly written, in as much as it wasn't that said, you, Scott, have to pay this. It was taxpayers must pay this. Well, the obligations of a taxpayer under this act are this. And what it was doing, it appeared, was it was relying upon me assuming or acting as a taxpayer, which appears to be a defined term within their documents. So it was very specific. I thought, well, let's look through some of these other documents that I've got. Where are they actually saying you have to pay this versus a defined entity has to pay this that you assume to be that entity? And that was a distinction I thought was worth mentioning, because a lot of them are seemingly reliant upon your consent to actually, as you said, pay the tax as your litmus test for whether you're corporate government or not. Are you volunteering to pay it? Now, if you're volunteering through that method, however, it's made very sneakily that you have to pay this, then there's the deception creeping in. And further, I've seen examples with, for example, the ATO, the Australian Taxation Office. They write these lovely little letters that say, we've received your correspondence, however, it does not alter your taxation obligations. Now, for a lot of people, they'll look at that and go, oh, it didn't work, my letter didn't work, or my notice didn't work. And yet, when you think of your actual obligations, if your obligations were zero in the first place, then great, your obligations haven't changed, so you don't have to pay anything. Where we go is, I think a lot of us think, my obligations are I have to pay this. Where's the basis? Where's the backup for that? I went to all this trouble to actually write a document looking for that validation, and I get one sentence that comes back and says, yeah, we got your letter, we don't care. Now...
I don't know. Is that what government has become? Is essentially, I mean, in my experience, that's what the primary amount of communications directly with any government minister or agency has become. Oh, we know we encourage you to come up with us with genuine concerns, and we'll read those genuine concerns, or at least we'll pay somebody to read them, and then we'll give you a message back saying, thank you very much for your genuine concerns, but we don't really care, and you have to do what we tell you. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Feed Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to
the collapse of us. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, it's the show that's all about the corruption in the government leading to the collapse of us. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, and the economy's really, really picked up because now everybody's snapped up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Scott. Now, I'm not sure what your surname is. Is it just Scott B? Are you just going by your first name because of the scumbaggery element, or do you actually have a surname that you're willing to prepare up?
Yeah, no, my family name's Bartle, and I don't have a middle name, so most often it's just Scott. I do have family over in New Zealand, so yeah.
Righto.
Fluoridated capital over there.
Yeah, it's quite gorgeous. It's chemtrail too, you know. You'll be happy to know that we've got some beautiful geoengineering programs, and as well we have a emissions trading scheme that's just kind of now getting chugging along, and everybody's power costs more, and everybody's petrol costs more, and nobody knows where any of that extra cost is going or why it was actually implemented in the first place. So it's great. It's like totally transparent.
I love it, isn't it? It's almost like it's for our benefit or security.
Yeah, and I think, what was it? Was it Jefferson who said, you know, that those who sacrifice their liberty for security deserve neither and lose them both?
Yeah.
Or words to that effect.
He's a great man. There was a quote I saw just recently, and I think it was given by John F. Kennedy, who had assembled with him a whole heap of senators and intellectuals in the in the White House, and he said there has not been such a concentration of intellect in this building since Thomas Jefferson sat in here alone. Oh, that's saying that's a pretty good compliment to the man.
Well, I have determined for a long time that when you're trying to get a majority of people involved in anything, you're getting the idiots in with the intellectuals. And essentially, what I found is with any government legislation that kind of carte blanche does anything to anybody, or sorry, rather doing anything to everybody, nobody wins.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I was going to say when you mentioned the government, what I've started noticing is that when you use that term, the government, it suggests that there's only one of them. And well, what I'm finding is that...
The New World Order. That's yeah. One. Yeah.
Well, say in the context of Australia, and I think a lot of these Commonwealth countries, or even the ones with the corporate governments, is that there's not just one, there's two. There's the original government that was what was meant to be where the governments were public servants that returned benefits to the citizens, or the, rather than use that word, the beneficiaries and the people. And then you've got this corporate behemoth that comes in and treats you as a trustee and receives the benefits themselves. So that's why sometimes you mention the government, or even worse, maybe our government, and you claim ownership of it. Are they really yours, or are they belonging to shareholders somewhere else?
You know, did you have a say in it? Were you sitting there in Parliament when they passed this law? Was there even a majority of the parliamentarians even sitting in that Parliament when they passed the law? I've watched Parliament television, Scott, and they were passing this law called something draconian like the Mandatory Chipping of All Livestock and Farmers Bill, or something of that nature. And there were like 18 politicians in the House who voted on it, and it got passed into law out of like 125 that should have been there.
Yep.
So not only are we being governed against our will, but we're being governed by very, very few.
Yeah. Well, if I can explore that a little bit further, a lot of us also accept that Parliament is Parliament. And what I noticed was an inconsistency with the name on the building, and a lot of the parliamentary documents that are coming out of Canberra was, it said the Parliament of Australia. And yet the Constitution specifically defines the Parliament as the Parliament of the Commonwealth. Now, I'm pretty sure that that Constitution was set in place with its own little paragraph at the bottom end, paragraph 128, this provides for the alteration of that constitution. Now, that means that the alterations need to be done in accordance with that, which is essentially a referendum. So, to me, changing names in the constitution is just not on. And it appears that what we've got is this little corporate entity called this Parliament of Australia that's come and layered itself quite nicely over the top of the real one, being the Parliament of the Commonwealth, and we all look at that now and go, oh, that's Parliament. And then we look at it on the television and the nightly news, and that's all we see. And so
I can't help but see the similarity between that anecdote and the Federal Reserve System in the United States. Essentially, if you want to defraud an entire people that believe that they're under the auspices of a benevolent government, but you want to do it privately, essentially you just name your private corporation something that connotes that it's actually a government entity, even if it's not even listed in the government pages of the phone book.
Yep. Like, as you said, the Federal Reserve is no more federal than FedEx. And that appears to be what we've got. The names of these things are very similar. And the spot-on one with customs was we've got this Australian Customs and Border Protection Service. Sounds official. Sounds good. Sounds like it's doing the job. And you just start looking in their annual report. First off, who are they reporting to? They've got their own Australian business number, which a lot of people will say, oh, that's just related to GST. Everyone has to have a business number because of the GST. And that there's the presumption that GST is legitimate as well. That's another story. However, you're looking through customs annual report, you start seeing little things like, oh, we provide border and protection services to government. Like, well, hang on. I thought you were supposed to be a part of government, not providing it to government. If you're providing it to government, are you government? Seems like a private contractor to me. And just little things like that. You go through the wording. You've got these chief executive officers. Now, I'm not old enough to go back in history to what some of them used to be called, but, yeah, we had the commissioners and that sort of thing. But I'm seeing corporate structures looking just like companies. And given that the countries were able to be run seemingly quite well up until these companies came along, it appeared to work at one point in time. So just saying, oh, we've got to run it like a company to make it more efficient sounds like an excuse for someone who wants government to be a corporation. Question it quite thoroughly.
And I think Mussolini once said fascism should be more correctly termed corporatism, because it is when the interests of the corporation take over that of the state. That's fascism.
Interesting. Yes, that's a very poignant quote.
And he was hung in public square with his mistress, and his hanging corpse was spat on by the people that he loved and led so well.
Loved and led, yes.
Now, here's the interesting... The other element here, I mean, look at it this way. As far as I've been able to discern through my research, is that fascism is a it's kind of like a corporate parasite on a public entity. What you do is you latch on with your sucker onto a part of the government, whether that be the fist of the government, like the military, and you turn it into a military industrial complex. Ergo, the actions of said military industrial complex will favour itself and only itself, and not the country that it's supposed to be serving / protecting, right? So you've got that element starting to, if you really look hard at any government or alleged government agency, you see that that becomes its main methodology. It's not looking out for number two, as a government should be. I'm protecting my people and their interests, not my own. I'm a politician. I'm a servant. I mean, if I was a politician, I would prefer that I have a uniform of black and white stripes, and that I would be commanded to wear manacles, so that I would be essentially a prisoner of the people's will, and a slave to for their benefit only, and discount my own wants, my own needs, and my own desires, and to simply serve others for a short period of time, so I can go back to being an individual and continue to serve and operate myself in a personally responsible and beneficial manner to those in the community around me. Okay, that's as far as I see the distinction between the public and the private sector. And what's happened, unfortunately, is that the private sector is now the public sector, and the public sector simply does not exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting metaphor. And like you said, it's who are you serving? One of the things that came up recently was a discussion about this Commonwealth of Australia, the company registered in Washington, D.C. And you get people saying, oh, but we need that to trade bonds. And, well, firstly, let's explore this idea. Before you have bonds, and I presume we're talking government bonds, first off, you obviously need government. And before you have government, in Australia at least, and I'm sure this is the same with the other Commonwealth countries, you need a Governor-General. Before you have a Governor-General, you need the Office of Governor-General. And the Office of Governor-General was constituted and put in place by the late Queen Victoria in Australia in 1900. Now, that's where we've got a few issues, is we've got some pretty uncertain times as to whether that office of Governor General was revoked by an heir and successor to the late Queen Victoria, in the same way that that office was put in place. And the documents that are around at the moment, the letters patent, are shaping up that no, there's someone else that's came along and attempted to revoke those original letters patent and put in place their own little office, and it's conveniently got the same logo as the trademark that's registered with the United States Patent and Trademark Office on the top of that document that set up that office of Governor General. Now, that to me says we've got some alarm bells going on here, and we could do with some answers. Hence the title of the documentary. Not one politician, not one minister, not one judge, not one commissioner, governor or governor general in Australia has been able to answer that question. And it would be a pretty simple one, I'd imagine.
Well, have you noticed that fraud is simply exposed as long as the truth is told, but easily concealed if nothing is said at all?
Yeah. Yeah, it's keep your mouth shut and no lies to be told.
I mean, cop busts you and you know that you've committed a crime. No comment. All of a sudden, the burden of proof is on the police officer to prove that you did the crime. Has he got evidence? Has he got this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. Makes a heck of a lot of work for him. He says one thing that is an admission of guilt. All of a sudden, the burden is on him and not the prosecutor. The prosecutor then has that tool to go out. I would presume that this is the exact same play that's going on between, say, you, Scott, asking very simple questions of the government. You know, where were you on this particular night and such at this particular time? No comment. Well, that's really suspicious, don't you think? The mere fact that somebody wouldn't answer a very simple question that would easily exonerate them means that they're probably complicit.
One would think so. Yeah.
I mean, that's the simple logic of it.
It is, and it's applying those practical examples that really highlights exactly the stupidity of the situation that we're in. Another good one is with that company in Washington, the Commonwealth of Australia. Now, the question to ask about that one is, does the Australian government own that Commonwealth of Australia being a company, or does the Commonwealth of Australia being the company own the Australian government? You see the two different scenarios we could have there? So if that's the two possibilities, what direction would the annual reports be going in? Would they be coming from America, or would they be going to America? And what we're seeing at the moment is the annual reports appear to be filed in America, coming from Australia. And to me, that suggests that the ownership resides in America and that the Australian government is owned by a company. In which case you think, do companies govern governments, or do governments govern companies?
Yeah. Well, see, ultimately, it comes down to the point, as we've said before, dependence and independence, because if you're relying on your governments to regulate your companies and not the people for which these companies provide goods and services, to suddenly say, hey, your service and your goods are both really crap, we're not going to give you any money anymore, the corporation then needs that government to force you into using them anyway. We'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends. Smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
And welcome back.
I'm flying a JFK.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go friggin' nuts. And I'm wearing a T-shirt, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you on the webcam, will be able to see this. It's a little, you know, the WWF panda. Well, it's got that guy, but he's got one eyebrow raised, and instead of WWF, it's WTF. And those of you who are in text language, I mean, what the f-? And it just occurred to me over the break how appropriate I was that I was wearing this T-shirt, considering the title of the documentary Scott and his friend George made called What the F-U-Q, which is ultimately what really occurred to them is this kind of a brilliant play on words, frequently unanswered questions, F-U-Q. I thought that was quite poignant as well, because whenever you look into any form of government agency, you'll hear a lot of expletives coming out of the people who are dealing with them, not necessarily from the ones inside. And it occurs to me that with all this wordplay, it's like they're using magic. Okay, that's why they call it spelling, because it's part of a spell that they cast on you. You know, like Shirley Bassey or something. I put a spell on you, and now your taxes are mine. That's essentially what we're dealing with here is an entity that has, well, almost all the power that they could ever want. And as I was saying before the break as well, that a corporation can't force you to buy its products. But a corporation that has done the deal with the government can force you to buy that corporation's products. So what if the government agencies are actually corporations using the monopoly of force that a government agency would have against you? What if that was the case? What would you do? How would you get rid of such a government? And ultimately, these things lie in the shadows. And in my opinion, whether you're dealing with mold or fungus or any type of other thing, bed bugs, whatever, they all don't like the light. Shine it down on them and they'll wither away and die. Scott, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Yes, I share your opinion on the light. Is when you shine the light on the truth there and what's happening, those little bugs scatter very quickly. And with actually, since putting that documentary out, had a handful more what you might call success stories with making the questions of so-called government and various regulations, various impositions evaporating. Simply, it seems, by shining that light on who they really are. I suppose a lot of people what they have been doing is doing the jumping up and down, demanding something or demanding an answer from those departments or judges or government. And what I suggested was, well, how do we turn that situation around where we're not getting any answers to make it work for us? And I thought, well, let's use the non-response essentially as the answer. Which is exactly what you do if you went to a barbecue and you're sitting there by the pool drinking a beer and there's a small child drowning, then if you sit there seeing that child drown whilst continue drinking your beer, surely your actions are the acceptance of that child dying. You're complicit in that. To me, there seems no other way. Now, when you put a situation to a so-called government department and you say, look, I'd like an answer within a reasonable period of time, whether it be 14 days, 21 days, to the question of, can you show me that you are legitimate government? If you can't give me an answer within 21 days, then I'm going to formalise the fact and take it as the truth that you are not government, and that instead you simply act as a corporate entity supported by your business number and your annual report that traces ultimately through to the likes of Washington. And from that point, we're starting to see people getting to the point where they've got essentially a default judgment, just like a court would use, just like a debt collector would use, just like the ATO actually use themselves with their default assessment practices, and we were getting our default judgment ourselves. We thought, well, if we've got a default judgment like that, which is essentially an agreement by the tacit agreement, then let's point at that as a almost like a line in the sand, just like a bank would do if they got a default judgment out of a court for a mortgage, because they'll stand there and point to that default judgment all day and say, look, you owe us. We thought, well, why don't we point at our notice of default that we've got and point at that all day and go, look, you're a company, and treat them as such from that point onwards. And like you were saying, their power and authority just falls in an absolute heap the instant they are called out or identified as a company.
Moral authority, I think that is one of the other things here. And if you've got somebody who has no morals, who has authority over you, it's not moral authority. You're the one who's got it, in fact. And you know what? Realizing what's going on, like what's really going on in the first place, is step one. Because you've got to know your enemy before you can engage them, essentially, as the old Sun Tzu said. So once you know your enemy, what battleground do you take this on? How exactly are you going to are you planning to dissolve government, or are you wanting to get the just exemptions for yourself and other people? Are you wanting certain laws to repeal? I mean, we understand the problem that the government's not a government; it's actually a corporation. So the ultimate goal is simply to have the opposite: have the corporations gone and replace it with an actual government of limited size, limited scope, and non-draconian apparel, essentially, so that they continue to serve the people rather than serving corporate interests. The question is, how? How is it we are supposed to accomplish that without public awareness?
Yeah. So it's getting that message out there for sure, and one of the things I was using that documentary as a tool to at least put that one to the people and go, well, here's a way to ask some questions and see if you can find out who you're dealing with. Like you said, identify the enemy, know who you're dealing with. And so the first notice that I send off to any so-called government department, its sole purpose is simply to determine who I'm dealing with. I'm not going in there arguing about the amount of a tax that's being charged. I'm not going in there arguing where my car was parked with regard to a parking sign. I'm not going in there arguing clause section 15 of this act or that sort of thing. None of that. Because ultimately, if they're not real government, whatever instrument they put in front of me, whatever amount they put in front of me, whatever figure they want to quote, doesn't matter a iota. Absolutely no input. So my first notices that I send off is, who are you essentially? I give them a little diagram. It's got real government or Commonwealth officers or corporate entity. Who are you? And I'll work it through and say, this is how I'd like a response. I'd like it, please use the words that I've found in common dictionaries, because there's a certain propensity to use words that have alternative meanings that are defined within certain acts. And it's amazing some of the responses that come back. You get these letters that come back that say, under this act you have to do that. Well, that's great. Thank you for telling me that. However, I'm asking about the validity of the act that gives you the lawful authority to do anything. So don't just quote me from the content of... We're not even at that point there yet. We're still at working out whether that act is legitimate. And a lot of these departments and even courts, the police, etc., there's two elements to them that gives them their so-called authority. You've got the office and you've got an office holder. So, for example, let's go with the Australian Taxation Office. You've got a certain act that I think is the Financial Management Act, and there's another act that the ATO is actually reliant upon to exist. And then you've also got the Commissioner. So you've got actually, you've got that Financial Management and Accountability Act of 1997, and you've got the Public Service Act of 1999. So you've got these two acts that is the foundation of the office. And then you've got the Commissioner, the Commissioner for Taxation. Now, both of them...
Well, hold on, we come to break. Hold that thought, and we'll come straight back to it. And I want to take some callers as well, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. We'd certainly love some callers in from Australia as well, if that's at all possible, ladies and gentlemen. 218-339-8525. We'll be right back in just a few minutes with Scott from the What the FUQ documentary. You can check that up on YouTube if you wish. Back in a minute.
Civilians, women, children, frontline, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution, gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 Eastern. And if you happen to be on the West Coast with Snoop Dogg, it'll be 3 till 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And my very special guest is Scott from the Australian. How many hits has this documentary got? Because regardless of how many it's gotten, even if it's gotten up to the million point or anything like that, it's still not enough because the corporate scum that that run the country are still there. Which is called,
I think,
what
we're
the frick, FUQ. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No worries, I lost you there for a sec. I think we're sitting at about just under 30,000 at the moment. The website's been going strong, anywhere between 800 and 1,200 hits a day lately. So the comments have actually been really positive overall. A lot of very positive people asking for more information and what they can do. And it's been very, very encouraging.
Well, also paramount to this is that, well, essentially if you're exposing real information, it's important that it's done in a proper way, a well-documented fashion as well. Not only for the fact that if you want to take these people to task, you best have your I's dotted and your T's crossed. Otherwise, not only will they come after you, but also the mainstream media will spin and manipulate and tease, essentially, based upon any slight inadequacy within it, and ignore basically the majority and the totality of the message. And you're basically uniquely qualified to do that job, Scott, if I might say, based upon your previous experience on super yachts and what have you. And I was wondering, because one of the elements to this show that I like to do that maybe other shows don't do quite as much is actually get some kind of a personal background on people about their previous employment and things of that nature. I was just wondering, what did your parents do for a living?
I suppose my father was an architect or house designer, and used to design solar houses. So he was fairly well awarded in that industry, and one of the pioneers in Perth. Took out various design awards across the country. And so I used to watch over his shoulder and paid quite an interest in house design, and went into all sorts of design, whether it be designing boats or yachts as a result of my interest on the yachting side of thing, and even up to high-rise buildings. So that was quite good. And my mother unfortunately passed away when I was 7, though her career was in psychology. So whether I inherited any elements of psychology in this exercise in questioning government, perhaps there's a possibility that that rubbed off on me as well.
And your career itself and your personal stories. I mean, my father used to work in the mines in Australia, and he told me one time that the only friends he has are people who can do things, people who can build things, people who can create, electricians, construction engineers, designers, and people of that real practical nature, to the point where he amassed a social network where he could get pretty much anything he wanted done in the real world, accomplished relatively quickly through the social network that he's built up with other skilled individuals like himself. Any similarity there?
I suppose in terms of having a network of friends in that regard, my construction skills in a manual sense are not ideal. I'm better suited at demolition and cleaning up afterwards. Not so flash on the construction side of things. But planning and management seem to be fairly good at that. Did a degree in the project management, and have worked in mining and construction work in the project management field for quite a few years. So, tick along quite well in that. But, the network of friends, definitely there's a support network around in terms of knowledge and getting things other sort of skills. And if I can digress into some of the others in Australia and around the world who know a lot of this knowledge of what's really going on, in many ways I haven't really improved upon that knowledge other than perhaps changed the context and the way in which it's presented and how people might go about using it by formulating questions, drawing conclusions and moving on from those points. So that's perhaps the skill that, or the extra that I've added to this whole scenario.
And in terms of your personal growth or development, kind of as a man, I found that when people become active in, say, the political realm, as we have, you know, talking about the truth rather than going into politics, as it were, it's usually because either A1, they were kind of born into it, the mentality of their family and everything sort of makes becoming the person that you are sort of inevitable. And the other element is usually people who become incredibly successful in some part of establishment type industry, and then through some mechanism or another, they suddenly get their entire worldview shattered by one particular incident that happens to them that makes them sit bolt upright and go, you know what? I've just gone through high school, preschool, kindergarten, elementary school, through my entire life, and I'm only just now realizing that I have to start my schooling all over again.
Yeah. Yeah, and there seems to be a number of people that I meet that have got that same thing going, almost as if it's like a program that's running in their software, if you like, that, oh, we really are dealing with government. And that is, say it might be 30, 40, 50 years worth of programming to run up against. And those folk are having quite a challenge going, oh, what do you mean this idea of government might be a company? What do you mean? And what perhaps is worth discussing here is the aspect of when you tell people this sort of information, typically the response has been, oh, no, that's no, you're wrong, government's government, you have to pay, all of that sort of thing. And yet when you ask them for the evidence, just little questions, are you sure that that act was brought into existence lawfully? Are you sure that commissioner was properly commissioned? Are you sure that governor is occupying the same office of governor general as constituted back when? Those little questions, when put to folk in that manner, appear to be received a lot better than when someone's telling them, oh, this is how it is. It was as if people's eyes were glazing over, shut down and start thinking about beer and football when you start telling them. And hence my approach to ask the questions.
Well, can I ask you as well, do you have any people who are dependent on you currently, like children or anything of that nature?
No.
So
no.
A lot of people, when they do this kind of thing, they say, I'm doing it for my kids or whatever. Are you doing it simply because it's the right thing to do?
It feels right to me. I've probably found probably about 12 to 18 months ago, and even longer going back when I first started challenging the Department of Transport, was it just felt like the right thing to do. And when I'd put something out there and put a correspondence to a department or something, like, yeah, that feels right. And I just started being guided more by how it felt and how it sat with me than like a bigger purpose or that sort of thing. And for whatever reason, it appears that things have got me to where I am now. And it still, to this day, feels like I'm doing the right thing. It just feels comfortable. It feels like I'm doing the honourable thing. I'm asking the questions respectfully. I'm not getting upset if I don't get an answer. I draw a line in the sand and move on accordingly. And it just feels right, if that kind of answers your question there.
Well, I can tell you an anecdote. Back in the day, I used to work for this real kind of psychopathic type employer. Kind of thing like he'd give me a call at 9:30 on a Friday night when I'm at my mate's place having a beer, you know, and he'd tell me, you know, get up, get off the couch, find a pen, find a paper, write down the number and the name of this client to call on Monday. You know, just total invasion of personal space kind of thing. There weren't no barriers, and I became very depressed and really upset. And they were getting me to drive out miles away to go to appointments, and now I was just chewing through my gas and all this sort of stuff. And my last day working there, they showed me all these leads and everything that were in my neighbourhood that they were giving to a chick who lived miles away. And then they asked me, "Hey, do you want to do these now?" And I was just kind of like, I want to quit, but I don't know if I should. So I call up my friend Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine here in New Zealand, and I say to him, you know, John, I can't really stand this, man. I really want to quit. You know, I was just wondering your advice. He says, does it feel right? I said, yeah, it does. So I quit.
Yeah.
I took my... I took my last paycheck, like $4,000. It was the biggest paycheck I've ever gotten in a month. And on top of that, a bonus of $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers, for which I bought a Mac computer and a camera, and went out there and started doing all of this because it was what felt right. For the first 3 years doing activism in the media field and what have you, I wasn't even so much as able to buy myself a coffee at a cafe, Scott. I was that broke. But it didn't mean that I never had coffees at cafe. I always had other people who knew that I was doing the right thing, supporting me in all these little eclectic ways, tiny little bits, you know. Somebody would buy me ciggy, somebody would buy me beer, somebody would buy me a coffee, somebody would buy me a slice of banoffee pie or something of that nature. And it turned out that when you're doing the right thing, everything that you need that you would ordinarily provide for yourself suddenly starts getting provided in other ways, like the like doing the right thing, suddenly the universe is behind you and you don't want for anything.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I can certainly relate to that. And I was talking with a friend yesterday on that, on the terms of, or the topic of personal sovereignty and knowing who we really are and coming from that position of authenticity, responsibility, integrity.
And Scott, you seem to be breaking. Like, Scott, you seem to be breaking up a little bit. Would you be able to just quickly turn your webcam off there?
Yep.
And we'll keep going. So, sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah. Is that better?
Beautiful.
Okay. I actually had a conversation yesterday with a friend regarding the personal sovereignty and finding that relative to about who you were, really were, whether you were coming from that position of authenticity, of responsibility and respect and honorability. And when you were knowing who you were and being able to operate without the need of anyone else, without the permission to do anything from anyone else, as long as you weren't harming anyone, then you were standing in your own personal sovereignty. It was like you were sitting on your own throne, and that was the way we were discussing it. And yeah, the universe has your back, essentially.
Well, and I found that this was something that synchronicity, right? Meaning meaningful coincidence. Have you had that start happening to you as soon as you kind of poured yourself into this field of research? Suddenly things are coming together seemingly by magic?
Yeah, definitely. That element of synchronicity, a perfect example was actually I put together a little booklet that I called The Validation of Government Authority. And it was a booklet that had a handful of diagrams on how to validate let's say real government, and started with little excerpts from the Constitution and written down through diagrammatic form. Is that what's happening today or is it not? Which way are we going? Have we got real government, etc.? And as a result of that getting out there, I ran into a gentleman who brought along the letters patent for the constituting of the Office of Governor and Governor-Generals in the country. And that was just perfect timing for that presentation to be able to work that into that same diagram. And that formed the basis of that document. And it was just right time, right place, perfect time. And, that's things have started just falling into place as we go through this. It's very powerful.
Well, it's kind of therapeutic as well, because I've found that what changes is that you're how can I explain this? It's like you're coming up against a wall initially, ladies and gentlemen, and you keep trying to haul yourself over it. And when you stop trying to go directly at the problem and you start coming at it from the side, you realize the wall's actually, it ends on one side and you can get right around it. And sometimes it's somebody else who comes up behind you who hefts you over it. It's really interesting. Just look at things differently. Welcome back. Oh yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Scott from the What the FUQ documentary do. And, you know, I was just thinking about this, doing what's right, doing what's right. What is right? What is wrong? And you come down to common law. And anytime anybody busts anybody for anything, you apply the simple principle. Did anybody get hurt, physically maimed or anything?
No.
Did anybody's property get stolen or damaged?
No.
Well, then why are you questioning me, officer? You know, that's essentially the base premise of it. If you ain't done anything wrong that physically hurt somebody or damaged any of their property in some way, shape or form, they shouldn't have anything to say about it. And there's no crime committed. So just, you know, goodbye. and simply refuse to recognize their authority and appeal to authority. The general mentality of it is, I feel, one of the main things that humanity has to get over now. Your authorities are not there because they earned it by responsibility. Okay, a lot of people don't understand the relationship between responsibility and power. The old saying goes, great power comes with great responsibility, and I believe that's wrong. I believe that by taking great responsibilities, you in turn get given great power because you have earned it. At the moment, we have politicians and entities and corporations and what have you who have inordinate amounts of power and have not earned a single scrap of it. And so it becomes fairly obvious why all these government agencies are fraudulent and irresponsible, and thus they provide the authorities and to allow the entire population themselves to become irresponsible. Scott, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Picking up on something you just said there about questioning the officer, if we respond straight off to any question that officer asks, have we automatically accepted the authority of that officer as an officer?
Well, then again, you got to wonder, does the officer actually have any authority if he's got no reason to talk to you, regardless of whether or not he's wearing a uniform?
Well, the way I come at it is, and working it back through that officer, is he's commissioned by a police commissioner, and the police commissioner is commissioned by, in Australia at least, the governor. Now, if somewhere along that chain of authority, there's a break in that chain, and let's just say, for example, that the governor was not properly commissioned or is not of the same office of governor as was legitimately constituted by a monarch out of the UK, then as we trace that all the way down through to the bottom, when we're dealing face-to-face with an officer on the street, we may not actually be dealing with a real officer. And so if we respond to the questions that that gentleman is asking of us as, oh, well, sorry, I was doing this or I was doing that, then the presumption is surely that that officer is who he says he is, whether it's just implied or just by the uniform or for whatever reason, we've skipped over that issue of that officer's authority being in question. We've presumed that it is so. Now, what I'm seeing is that with the appearance of these two governments and these two structures, that I'm no longer willing to actually accept the presumption that we're dealing with legitimate officers, legitimate departments, legitimate judges, legitimate tax commissioners, you name it. Let's see some evidence. And it's sad in a way that we've got to that point where that reasonable doubt is at that point where I believe we should be questioning them all. It would be nice to be in a position where we didn't have to even think about that. And I'm seeing that because of this reasonable doubt that there's two systems, I'm thinking that it's a very valid question to be able to question, who are we dealing with, before we even start dealing with those little matters. And it's very easy to do. I mean, people are turning up to courts and they call the guy wearing a wig, Your Honour. And the instant you do that, you've skipped over the issue of, well, are we in a real court to start with? Was the act that constituted that court given royal assent by a properly commissioned governor? And was the judge at the front wearing the wig commissioned or appointed by a properly commissioned governor in the first place? So it's very easy to fall back to and rely upon these institutions or these officers, judges, commissioners, you name it, and treat them as if they are really government. And I'm suggesting that that may not be the case, and as sad as it may be, to question who we're dealing with. And I'd say it's a pretty reasonable thing to treat as fact, that if you don't see that evidence that you're dealing with a legitimate officer or magistrate or commissioner or whoever, if you don't see the evidence that they're legitimate, are they?
Well, in New Zealand, I believe there's a law, if a officer is unlawfully arresting you, it's within your lawful right to assault him, essentially. If somebody is, even if they're wearing a uniform, if they're behaving in a criminal manner, you as the citizen are then endowed with the power to defend yourself by any means necessary.
Yep.
Now, and that seems like a proper way of doing things. Ergo, unless somebody is acting with full, lawful, reasonable, and technical authority, they have none and can be treated just as much as you would treat a criminal coming into your home.
Yeah. The fallback position appears as well to cite the likes of those sort of acts. And what I'm seeing is those acts themselves that we rely upon to even do such an action of questioning or challenging a police officer, what if they're not even legitimate? Now, it's a very sad situation it's come to that possibility, but there's the likelihood as well that some of those laws that we cite today, like the Criminal Code or the Crimes Act, are not really the Crimes Act or the Criminal Code that might have been brought in back in the early 1900s, back in the times when we actually had a Governor General or a Governor to give it the royal assent. There's a certain amount of doubt as to whether this corporation calling itself government hasn't copied those original acts, done what's called reprinting them, copyrighted them at the same time, bringing them under their, let's say, their architecture of a company, their corporate umbrella. And now those acts that we thought were legitimate because of the date on them, say, for example, the Customs Act of 1901, oh, yeah, there was a legitimate Governor General around then, 1901, definitely. Yep, that's all legitimate. And yet, if that act has been copied, reprinted, altered, amended under the umbrella of a corporation pretending to be government and has their corporate logo on the top, was supposedly given royal assent by a governor or Governor General who wasn't commissioned properly or of the wrong office, then you're looking at the quality of toilet paper again. And everything I keep coming back is go back to the source of where the authority comes from and question, can we rely upon that? Don't just presume that we've got a legitimate act, we've got a legitimate commissioner, legitimate justice, whatever. We seem to be in the point now where none of those can be taken for granted, that just about every institution that we are reliant upon under the umbrella of government is in doubt. and not one scrap of evidence has been able to be provided when asking questions of, and I think we're up into the hundreds of so-called ministers and government officials that we've asked now along that line of questioning, and not one of them have even attempted to give an answer. And that says quite a bit.
Well, instead of answering, have they threatened you with certain actions?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's some of the responses have been hilarious. When I suppose you come at it from the avenue of what haven't they said? And that's what I was highlighting in the documentary was, let's go through some of these communications that are coming back from these so-called government departments of what actually aren't they saying. Now, you might get a correspondence that says, we're going to escalate this to the Fines Enforcement Registry and they might rescind your license and you might lose demerit points on your driver's license and all of this sort of stuff. Like, great. Thank you very much. That's fantastic. Now, back to my question where I was asking about the validity of your organisation to even fire up the coffee machine. Can we cover that one first and see if you have lawful authority to exist? Because whatever you say doesn't really matter without that lawful authority. And that's what we keep highlighting and going back to, is where's the evidence that that act was given royal assent by a properly commissioned governor? Where's the evidence that the commissioner of this department was given, was appointed properly? Where is that evidence? And you can go through correspondence from these so-called government departments and go, well, really, it didn't tell me anything. And all the other words on the piece of paper really don't mean anything without their authority. You're back to that level of authority of an ice cream man. They've got absolutely no authority at all. You're back to dealing with the company and you're like, well, I know how to deal with them. We'll give them some terms and conditions and treat them just as you would any other company. And then they can choose whether they want to do business with you or not.
Contracting, in other words, I'm going to enter into a contract with you in good faith, and you're going to provide such and such a service. And if you do not provide such and such a service, here are the consequences. You will have to pay me late penalties, or you can be sued, or you can go to court and what have you. There's all these kind of ramifications if you don't keep your word. The difficulty is if you've got a government organization that's in fact a corporate. The places where you would often seek justice for corporate scumbaggery of sorts would be the courts. The problem is they own their own enforcers.
Exactly. So that's where you get a certain reluctance to go down this path, in as much as, yeah, they own the courts. So that presents different challenges. And how do you get your remedy? Now, the way I've approached it has been a matter of first determining the capacity in which who I'm dealing with. Once I find out that they're actually a corporation and have formalised that within a notice of default, I keep pointing to that notice of default from that point onwards. At that point, I issue terms and conditions. For example, I might say, any instance where one relies upon invalid or unlawful act to extract any money from me, I will charge you 2,000 ounces of silver, at which point they've got that choice to enter into the contract with you or not. They can go and harass someone else, or they can choose to accept the terms and conditions that I've proposed. And say they do that, I promptly give them an invoice, and I come from the position of thank you for doing business with me. As any company would do, you'd be appreciative of your customers. So the mindset was no longer, oh, they can't do this, you can't do that. So I'm like, well, sure, you can issue me an infringement notice or you can do this. I'd like to see some backup for it. If you're not real government and you've got no basis for your infringement notice, Well, then that'll qualify as one of those items on my fee schedule and I'll send you an invoice. I, of course, give them the opportunity to waive that invoice if they can demonstrate that they do have some basis for their act or their instrument or their own existence. And to date, not one of them have been able to even take up on that. So each invoice I'm issuing is now further reinforcement of the fact that we're dealing with a corporate entity and that they've chosen their own consequences.
Well, and again, what consequences can we actually give them if they own the authorities that are supposed to enforce them? I mean, what if we ourselves pretended that we have authority and made up a court, appointed a judge and a jury, and held a trial of these people in their absence, and then issued a judgment, and then forced them to pay and or comply with made up police officers that that we have, you know, just a bunch of guys volunteer, they become a fake deputy or something of that nature, and they just walk up to these people when they come out of their office, slap them in handcuffs and haul them away to this fake jail that we made up, and then essentially we'd just be playing their own game against them. And that would seem like a lot of justice to me if you used fraud and deception as a way of actually bringing real justice to these criminals. that's just my mind running away with me. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There must be some kind of way out of here, said the enslaved citizen to his corrupt corporate government. Speaking of enslaved, I was thinking about this. Anybody who's currently working and paying taxes and hasn't volunteered to pay those taxes is a slave. Okay, you know, you're a serf on the global plantation. You don't get half of what you need back from those taxes. You can guarantee if the government came out and said, hey, look, everybody, now taxes are voluntary. You don't have to give us a third of your income to get virtually nothing back. But you can if you want to. Imagine how many people would just go, you know what? I think having an extra couple of K in my bank every year would actually help me stay on top of all these bills that seem to be increasing and increasing and increasing. Maybe that would also help me to keep my car with a warrant and a registration and what have you that the government normally charges me for, so that I don't get pulled up by government enforcement officers named cops to give me tickets for not paying this other stuff. And have you noticed there's like a money go-round that you'd expect to see at some kind of a circus? Dude jumps on and he pays to get on, and then when he's on, he has to pay to stay on and has to pay to get off as well. And they don't tell you that you have to pay to stay on when you pay to get on, and they don't tell you while you're paying to stay on that you'd have to pay to get off. It's just ridiculous. But there are people I know that are currently working for the government, whether those be council, whether those be law enforcement officials, whether those be special forces, whether those be politicians, who do know what is going on and are not happy about it. However, they would be required to get out and do something in order to change, particularly within their official capacity, because when a police officer comes out and says the Australian Federal Police is a corporation and I will not be enforcing the diktat of this corporation on the Australian people for which I took an oath to serve. And I will arrest scumbags who want me to do otherwise, essentially. We had people in England do this. We actually arrested judges for issuing unlawful judgments, things of that nature. It is possible to use people that are currently within the system to bring it back around again. And I've come up with this conclusion, Scott, that essentially everything's upside down, okay? So if you want to do the right thing, basically you just do the direct opposite of whatever's currently being done. and you'll be doing the right thing. Are you there, Scott?
Yeah, sorry, lost your last question.
Sorry, it's a topsy-turvy world. So if you want to do the right thing, just do the opposite of whatever's being done right now.
It appears to be that way. Yeah, it's a completely backwards system. When you get told to apply for a license, it's like that appears to be a privilege. And yet one thought we had a right to actually do whatever was the license or the subject of the license. And like you were saying about those folk in government, in the forces that want to speak out about this and feel constrained because their livelihood depends upon it, there are a lot of people who are in that position where they go, yeah, I know what's going on, and yet I'm feeling like the little rat in the running wheel where I've got to keep running else I can't put food on the table for my family and I've got to keep towing the line for the moment. And that's going back to the, as you said, the independence versus the dependence. There's an example of someone who's dependent upon that system, and it's been engineered quite cleverly, I believe, to be like that, to be the way where people are dependent upon those structures, that system. And I suppose the one they fear the most is those who are independent and able to make their choices freely without the dependence on the system. And for me, I'd personally like to see police to be real police. I'd love to be able to call them up if someone was breaking into my house and sort of get them off the road from standing there pointing the speed gun down the road. I'd love to be able to call upon them to do what a lot of them, I suppose, really signed up to do in the first place. A lot of people would have gone into the police force, which was what we originally called it, and yet it's been usurped to become the police service in a lot of states in Australia. You only have to look at the business registration name. Perfect example is Western Australia. You've got the Western Australia Police trading as the Western Australian Police. A very subtle difference between their two names. The entity is the Western Australia Police and their trading name is the Western Australian Police. But it's as plain as day. They've got a trading name with a business number. And again, people will come back to that GST and say, oh, well, the law in for the GST says you need a business number. Well, we skip over the presumption that law itself was a law. And when you go and question that one, the whole thing starts falling on its face. And that's why I keep going back to the root and the essence of where the authority is coming from. And if you question around that, all I'm getting at the moment is complete silence. So if you use that as the answer, it kind of tells the story on its own.
Well, and also another issue that I wanted to approach is that personal liability, more to the point, accountability. Because once you get elected, suddenly your accountability goes the frack out the window. You don't have to do what you said you were going to do. You don't have to pass the laws you said you were going to pass. You can just basically, as soon as you get given the power, use that power to shield you from any consequences of doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And there's no transparency. That's the other thing. I want transparency, I want accountability, and I want responsibility. These are three things that I think all governments don't have anymore. Like, in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I've not seen it in 5 years of looking into any government department or any legislation that's being passed. I see no transparency, no responsibility, and no accountability. Nobody is taken to task. It's kind of like if you're a member of a corporation, a board member, as it were, and you make a decision specifically to pollute a river so that the people will instead now have to buy their water off you because your oil cartel also has shares in a private water company, you can't actually go to jail for having that happen because you're only a member of a corporation that's only doing its bidding, as well. There ain't no personal accountability and nobody's there documenting those boardroom meetings, so there's no transparency. And because of the nature of what they're doing, because there's no transparency, nobody can see what they're doing, because there's no accountability, nobody could do anything if they were doing it, there's no reason to be responsible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, very big point. And we've been picking up on that recently. And you look at the number of letters that are received from these so-called departments that don't actually have an individual's or a person's name signed at the bottom. And typically, or digressing into, say, for example, banks, lawyers and that sphere, the amount of lawyers that write with these letters, whether it be a letter of demand, and they sign it as the lawyer's company's name. I'm like, well, is no one willing to actually put their name behind this, or are you hiding behind something? And so some of the notices that I've been writing back to these sort of things are, well, I'll go to their website and pick out the list of directors or councils, or even with a local council. A parking fine is a perfect example. You'll get a parking ticket from that's signed by Parking Officer 901. We're like, well, great. I'm sure his mum didn't call him Parking Officer 901. And so when I write the notice into the council, I just select one of the local councillors and say, look, in the absence of being able to personally identify the author of infringement number XYZ, you've been chosen to deal with this matter. You are named. And if you are the so-called public representative and public servant, then here's a job for you. Go for it. See if you can validate your own existence. And funnily enough, the letter or the notice gets fobbed off to the corporate services branch. It's quite hilarious. So the number of people who are hiding behind the facades of a company and don't want to put their own name to it. Right.
Yeah, well, I think you got to shed your fear of these things, you know, but shedding your fear doesn't mean to kind of close off and pretend that they don't exist. Simply to be aware of it, but shed your fear of it. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, well, essentially, more people have to stand up just of their own accord. Don't stand up just because one person is standing up and you want to stand behind them. Stand up because it's the right thing to do. And suddenly, you'll realize there's nothing that can really stop you. Scott, thank you for your time today, man. Thank you for all the work that you do. And ladies and gentlemen, you can check out his website, truth-now.net, is it? I think it's truth-now.net, and the documentary is What the Frack FUQ. What the FUQ. All right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.